Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for coming out to this talk. Before we get started, I just kind of wanted to gauge from the room, how many of you saw the LiveShare demo in the keynote on Monday? Okay, good.
That's a lot of people.
Basically everybody. So we're gonna just show you the same thing and then leave. No, I'm just kidding. So in this talk, we wanna kind of take a step back, talk through LiveShare, what it's useful for, why we built it, and then go through it in a much more deeper level than you saw. So my name is Jonathan Carter.
I'm John Hsu.
We're both PMs on the Visual Studio team working on LiveShare. The other thing I want to mention quickly before getting started is the term pair programming, as we're using it in the title, is not meant to imply any specific practice or workflow that your team is using. We're using it in the loosest sense possible, two or more developers working together on the same problem, whether it's advice, et cetera. So let's just keep that in mind. So briefly, what are we going to talk about in this session? Well, first we want to, as I mentioned, take a little bit of a step back and talk about collaboration and why we felt and why we learned from talking with developers that there was a need for some better tooling. What are we doing today? Why is that not working? How does LiveShare help? Then we'll go through a deeper dive of LiveShare itself beyond what we showed in the keynote, show kind of how relevant it is to various scenarios, because we're probably not all building the same kind of applications. And so I want to make sure that everyone walks away from this session knowing that LiveShare can help you in your day-to-day. And then discuss kind of where we're going, because we released the public preview on Monday, but that doesn't mean that's the end of our journey of collaboration. Okay. So first and foremost, let's just talk about collaboration and why, as developers, this is very important. And really, well, let's talk about why it's becoming more important. Because it's a little philosophical to just go, why is collaboration in general important? Hopefully you understand that. But there's been some trends in the developer world over the last few years that certainly make things become a little bit more complicated and make the value of collaboration arguably much higher. And one of those is the velocity by which the market demands that many products ship on, right? I'm not a DevOps expert, but you know, it doesn't take you looking on many blogs or whatever to see CI/CD all the things, right? It's like you haven't even written a single line of code and you already have a pipeline to publish on every commit. And the reason that's that way is because the demand for fast time to market, the competitive nature of our industry, makes it such that we have to move faster, right? When companies and industries talk about digital transformation, it's almost like a fancy word for just saying we have to move quicker and be more savvy because the startups are moving quicker than us and we don't want to get disrupted, right? And so that's a big trend. So let's keep that in mind. We want to move quicker as a team. And the second is the distribution of teams, right? Maybe 10 years ago, teams were much more co-located and centralized, but that's changing. In fact, over the last few days, we've had the privilege of talking with folks at our booth, and the number of teams that we talk to that are not located in the same building is nearing 90%. It's so high. Like, it's almost the exception that I talk with someone that's like, yeah, we don't have anyone that's not in the same building as us, or in the same state, or in the same country. And so that's another trend. And personally, our team believes in that very strongly, because if you're going to hire the best developers, you need to seek out the best, and they might not be in your area. Now, these two trends come with them some potential side effects, right? One of them is that the more you're moving quickly and the more you're distributed, the more knowledge around your team can become lost, right? The water cooler effect kind of taken to the next level. And that's problematic, because the more teams are cohesive and the more they're on the same page and working together, the more that velocity actually can increase, because you don't have to keep reorienting yourself every single time you're talking about a bug or a PR, etc. And finally, sometimes because of that rate of change and because of that distributed nature of teams today, you might either get feedback too late, right? Oh, I already checked in that code and we released it, and it broke this scenario. Nobody gave me that feedback on my PR. Or you never get it at all, because somebody that maybe was the right person to give you the feedback was busy that day, and so they didn't leave a comment on your PR, et cetera, right? It's just the nature of the beast. And so in general, we kind of talk about this notion of how is it that you can maintain confidence at speed? Like, how can your company, your development team, move fast, distribute yourself as needed, but still feel like you're confident in the quality and the cohesion of your team? And really, the answer, among many other answers, is to make sure your team is collaborating often. And what that means for you is different. Every day, twice a day, every week, but something, right? Not just stand-ups, but making sure that as you have questions, as you have needs to understand something better, that you have the tools needed to work. Okay, so that's kind of the framing of why we kind of got here and why we've seen from talking with many developers the need for better tools. So let's talk a little bit about how we've been collaborating today, right? There is existing solutions. And in the keynote, you might have heard me take a jab at screen sharing. I'm not against screen sharing. It's a wonderful tool, and it actually has some extremely valuable properties, like the fact that it's sharing pixels. And the benefit of sharing pixels is that no matter what's on your screen, the other person can see it too. And so it's this universal way of projecting something, like, look at this thing. And it's also very lightweight to join. If you have Zoom or Skype or Teams installed, then you just click a link and you're in, right? But the downsides is that it's not really collaborative, arguably, right? It's very much like, hey, I'm directing a movie, watch it. And if you want involved, you can ask me for the keyboard, but then you have it, and then I have to ask for it back. And so you have this kind of negotiation of control, right? When we use the term collaborative, what we mean is two people working together concurrently, not like ping pong development. Also, latency is a problem, right? But not always for some people. And then the other notion is that it makes it inherently about one person's environment. And so John might be using a different tool or key bindings or window layout. And every time, if we want to collaborate frequently, we have to have that reorientation problem every single time he asks for help. And so there's some ways to improve that. Another one is version control, right? There's no reason why you couldn't have a private branch on your Git repo that you push all of your changes and say, hey, go check this out, and see if you can repro my bug. And that works really well, because if the team's already using Git or you're already using Subversion, then it's lightweight to do. Git checkout branch, and you're done. But then you kind of run into the does a repro on my machine problem, right? Because, oh, their environment's set up differently than yours, or they didn't have the right dependencies or the right SDKs, or they don't have access to the network resources that you do on their machine. And then it's just you realize that you're not actually collaborating on the necessary state that you're in that they need. And so we don't really see that as being a collaboration tool. And that's before even getting into the fact that it's not real time, right? It's kind of like the difference between email and Slack or Teams. Like, you could use email to chat, but it feels a little bit clunky after a while, right? And then finally, browser IDEs. There's a lot of great tools out there that have collaboration built into them by virtue of the fact that you're now in this cloud environment. And those have the benefit of being accessible anywhere and lightweight to get started. But you have to adopt a new tool, right? How many of you in the room today are interested in choosing a new tool versus the one you're using right now? Not many. A few, and that's cool. I mean, because as technologists, we're always kind of fickle and looking for the next cool thing. But most developers are pretty opinionated about their tool. And so it's not like I want to go use a new thing just to collaborate. I want to use the thing I'm using now and just work with my team better. Okay, so then what is live share? And you already saw the demo, so you know the answer. But just to rephrase kind of our high-level, you know, marketing pitch, so to speak, is real-time collaborative development from your favorite tools, right? And that contrasts with the existing solutions we have today in that real-time, you need real-time collaboration to have that instant feedback. Collaborative development, and what we mean by that is that every piece of context that you use in your day-to-day job, whether it's debugging, whether it's terminals, whether it's a running app on your machine, needs to be part of that context. And then from your favorite tools, well, of course, everyone in this room's favorite tool is Visual Studio or Visual Studio Code, right? Right? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And so you don't want to choose a different one. And so we can make collaboration simpler. Okay. So let's switch over, and we're going to walk through a demo that is somewhat similar to the one that you saw on Monday, but we're going to go into it in a lot more detail, because like I mentioned, we've had the benefit of having worked with a bunch of folks over the last 2 days and hearing the questions that they ask us after they saw the keynote demo. And so let's just try to answer some of those as a group. Let's collaborate. Okay, so I've got this blogging app here. Pretty standard stuff. I mean, the world needed another one, right? So here you go. And unfortunately, there's this entry at the top talking about Build. It's been an awesome event, hopefully for you as well. I want to favorite it and kind of leave my mark on this, but that doesn't work. So there's an issue here. So I'm working on my Mac in Visual Studio Code. This is the same theme I was using in the keynote, which people typically don't like, but I love it, right? And I don't want to leave this environment. I want to get John's help. I want to just do that as naturally as possible. And so LiveShare is an extension for VS and VS Code. How many of you actually installed it already? I'm just curious. Okay.
Nice.
A good amount, but most of you haven't. And so that's your homework for after this talk. So when you've installed it, for most people that haven't done it yet, the only primary thing that it adds to your environment is a share button, kind of like if you've ever been in a Word document, right? So sharing becomes a natural part of the editing experience. And so in this case, this is the Node.js application I'm working on. I want to get John's help with this bug, so I'm going to just click Share. And let me talk quickly about what this is doing, because that's been one of our most common questions at the booth. It is not zipping up this code and uploading it to the cloud. It's actually doing nearly nothing. What it's doing is it's pinging our service in Azure and just saying, hey, here's this URL. If somebody requests to join it, I'm available at this IP address. And that's it. And that's why it's so fast. And so with that in my clipboard, I can now use whatever tool that I'm used to communicating, whether it's Teams, Skype, Slack, whatever, and send that to somebody to come join my session. So in this case, I'm going to jump over to Teams and paste that in to John, and let's switch over to his machine and see what that looks like.
Yeah, so on my machine, I get it on Teams. And as you can see, me and JC, we've collaborated a lot. We sent a lot of share links between each other. So what I can do is I can click on this link, and it launches my browser. And what that does is it sees that I have the LiveShare extension already installed. So what I can do is I can launch Visual Studio, and it will launch that, my IDE, the IDE of my choice, and it will start joining the session that JC has already created. It's going to, so when you initially get LiveShare, you would have to be able to sign in, and we allow for signing in using a Microsoft account or GitHub. You can use whatever is comfortable for you. In Visual Studio, you can use your personalization account, and it allows you to easily join into the session.
And do you have Node.js installed on your machine?
Nope, I don't have Node.js installed on my machine. I don't need to set up anything in my IDE to be able to collaborate with Jonathan. And when I join in, I'm instantly joined into the project. I can see in my Solution Explorer that I see all the files and folders that make up this project. Additionally, in the editor, I'm joined into the page that the file that Jonathan is currently editing. So as he clicks around, I see his cursor, I can see his highlights. What I can do is I can show what's happening on his screen. And while I'm in there, I can also highlight. He can see my cursor. And we're able to see where we are within this file together.
Yeah. So hopefully everyone can see how fast that is. Like because of the fact that existing tools and the distributed notion of Teams today, it's become very important and like a passion of ours to optimize the protocol that is being used under the covers to make it so that collaboration is as fast, natural, easy as possible, right? Okay. So the other thing, John, is did you have to download this code? Like when you joined, what happened?
So yeah, so I just had to click the link and it joined. I didn't have to download any. I didn't have to download the code. It didn't have to be zipped or anything, and it was instantly on my editor.
Yep. So what's happening actually is that the tree that you see in his Solution Explorer is kind of an illusion. When he joins, It goes up to the Azure service and says, what's the name of the top level directories and files? And then what's the contents of the file that the host, in the live share kind of parlance, we use the term host and a guest, what's the contents of the file that the host has open? And the reason that that's important is a lot of people that we've talked to have asked us, oh man, my project is a gigabyte C++ beast. This is gonna not work well for us. And the good news is that's okay, because if it's on your machine, then the only thing that the person you're collaborating with needs is pay to play. If he opens another file, so if John goes and navigates to something else, in this case, comments.js, he only retrieves the contents of that file. So that way, the in experience of joining is as lightweight as the situation demands, right?
And I think one of the cool things with that is that I can navigate to another file in the project while Jonathan stays in his own file. So we're able to independently navigate through this project to be able to look at different files while trying to figure out what's going on inside of this project.
Exactly. And I want to talk to that point real quick, because we have people that have said, well, how common is it that you have two people doing completely separate things at the same time in the same project? And the answer is, well, it depends, right? There are teams that do pair programming in the sense of, hey, we're working on the same feature. You go write the tests, I'll write the feature, and then we'll come together at the end and see if things pass. And so in that case, you'd have fully kind of parallel work. But the other thing that we see more commonly is what we call kind of micro independence, where John and I are working on the same thing together, but there's periods where he needs to go look at the definition of a function or go look at something at the top of the file while I'm at the bottom. And being required to, like with screen sharing, interrupt the other person to do those kind of fleeting thoughts is enough to break you out of the comfort of the collaborative experience, right? And so, for example, John and I are now in different files, but if you wanted to refocus with me, you could, right?
Yeah, exactly. So on my side, if I wanted to go back to where Jonathan is, say we're off in different files and we've gone off and done a little bit of exploration and we want to come back together, what I can do is I can go follow where Jonathan is. So we have different ways of following in Visual Studio. There's icons to represent the different people that are inside of a collaboration session. Clicking on Jonathan's icon, I can jump to his location and I am following him. As he scrolls, I don't have anything on the mouse pad. My editor scrolls along. He can also navigate to other files, and I also follow him along to those places. This really helps in terms of being able to follow the actions of someone and being able to figure out, oh, they want to show you something. So you follow along, and you're able to get that context.
Exactly. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I do want to show John something. The favorite article does not work, right? And so imagine that this ability to go independent but together is very useful for helping explain or orient the person that you're getting help. So John, article favoriting doesn't work. Mm-hmm. This is the code for that route right here. Any ideas what might be going wrong here? Anything would be super helpful.
So yeah, so what I can do is I can do a little bit of exploration on this. And one of the cool things about LiveShare is that we get language service features. So what I can do is I can go into user and be able to peek the definition or look at what's going on there. So I can click peek definition, and I'm able to see where it's defined. And the thing is with this is all being forwarded to me from Jonathan's machine. It's like I said before, it's nothing I've downloaded on my machine, so it's all being run on his. So looking at that, I get a little bit more of an understanding of how this user is defined. And it looks like there's something there, but we can dive a little bit deeper with some debugging as well.
Do you want to show editing as well?
Oh yeah, exactly. So what I can do is see, so one of the first things that I've seen is that Jonathan's using a lot of consts all over his code, but right here it's using a var. So how about I change that? So what I can start typing out const, and I get IntelliSense completions. So this is all IntelliSense and language service forwarded from Jonathan's machine. So like I said, I don't have Node installed on my machine, so I'm seeing the IntelliSense completions as they are on Jonathan's machine.
And even, hold on real quick, the error, right?
Like, yeah.
Once again, he doesn't have Node.js or any tools for Node.js, but he's able to edit my code and then have my environment detect and push that is syntactically incorrect.
So yeah, okay. So once I correct that, the error goes away and it clears out of my error list on both of our machines, actually.
Yes. So under the covers, just kind of a little bit of fact of interest for you guys is we're using actually the same protocol that Visual Studio and Visual Studio Code use to communicate with language servers to support IntelliSense and navigation for all languages. And the reason that's interesting is we've also had other people that, aside from the code base size, have expressed concern that, oh, the symbols database for my application is 700 megs, which is crazy. So once again, does the guest need to download that whole file in order to get completion? And once again, the answer is no, because it's only at the point that they say, give me the list of items at this file on this line, and that's how we can keep things nice and efficient. All right, John, should we maybe debug this app?
Yeah, how about we go do that?
Okay, so you set a breakpoint on, let's say, line 200.
Okay, and what I'll do is I'll set the breakpoint, and you see the breakpoint on my editor, but let me show both of our editors. The cool thing is that when I set that breakpoint, it's also synced to Jonathan's machine. So between the two of us, we can set a bunch of breakpoints to wherever we want to go and break at when we're debugging. So when we actually do go through, we're able to stop at each of those points.
Exactly. And the reason that we want to demonstrate this, and as I mentioned in the beginning, right, that we are trying to help provide collaborative development end-to-end, right? We've had tools that have enabled real-time editing for a little while, and that's really powerful. The language services on top take it the next step. But we know that there is much more to getting assistance or advice from someone than just being able to edit source code. And so debugging and that context that comes along with it is critical. So with John setting that breakpoint, let me hit F5 on my end. And what that's going to do is start up that session, as I would expect, right? Switch back over to the app, and then I'll attempt to favorite that article again, which, because we're in split screens view here, we see that we both hit the breakpoint, right?
So both of our debuggers are attached to the running app on Jonathan's machine. And we both are stopped at the same breakpoint that we set earlier. So while we're debugging, I also, as the guest in the session, I also have the ability to inspect and be able to understand what's going on there. What I can do is I can hover over different things and be able to see what's going on there. I can expand data tips, or I can go into the locals window, or in the locals and variables in VS Code, and expand things to be able to inspect what is going on inside. So yeah, it's looking like there's something there. How about we dive a little bit deeper so we can negotiate control while we're debugging? So what I can do is I can step into this function to see what is going on in there.
Well, let me do one first. So let me say, hey, I'm the expert here. I'm going to step over this line. I don't think that's the problem.
Okay.
And then maybe you think we need to step into it.
Yeah, I think we should step into this line.
Okay.
So while Jonathan first did a step over, I can do a step into, and it goes into that function. So yeah, and so both of us navigated into a new file where the function is defined, and we can see what's going on there. So let me try stepping over one more time. So given how this is written, I think what should happen is that this should step into the if statement. So I'm going to step over.
Let's see.
And looks like it didn't.
It did not.
So it looks like there's something wrong with how it's defined here. And it looks like it's an index error. Don't know how that got there.
Anybody know what line 62 should be doing?
Yeah.
Anybody see the bug? Collaborative development to the extreme.
Yeah.
If not, that's okay. You can scream it out. Yes.
-1.
Exactly right. Yeah.
So I'll go in and I'll change it to -1. And what I can do is I can save, and it saves the file. And on Jonathan's machine, you can see the way that we've set up this machine, this project, is that when I save, it automatically detects changes, and it reruns the debugger, and it kicks it off again, and we're both connected into the app again.
Yes, so the powerful point about that is that it isn't just edits that we're synchronizing, it's also file saves. And many projects, whether it's .NET Core, Node.js, PHP, have tooling that is built around watching the file system to respond to it, right? So in this case, I have a debugger session that is wanting to refresh itself whenever a file is changed. And that way, John can restart the debugging session at this point. Now, like we did in the keynote, what I want to do is I could verify this fix myself, but I want John to be able to do that. And so let's use another feature of Live Share that is part of that end-to-end collaborative development, right? So in this case, this app, let me switch back over to it and just highlight that it's running on localhost 3000, right? That's not Azure.com or something where I've deployed to a VM or a web app. It's on my machine. And so traditionally, what have we really done to solve this problem of making something available to other developers? Maybe you set up SSH and you let them connect to you, but then you have to create an account, and setting up SSH isn't necessarily the most user-friendly thing. There are services where you can create internet tunnels, but then you're using another tool, and then it's also not entirely cross-platform. But with LiveShare, you can just take advantage of the session that you've already created. So I'm going to say share server, and the port that the app is running on is 3000. And so we'll just get that and then go to John's machine so he can then view the app on his.
So on my machine, I can go and look at the sharing menu and see the viewed shared servers. And there we see that the port that Jonathan has created and shared with me, I can access now. So what I can do is, with that port selected, I can open it in browser, and his local host is mapped to my local host now. So it shows as local host on my browser, and it's going to start, and it's going to start connecting to the running app on his machine.
Oh, I terminated the app.
Oops.
One second. It's actually not slow. It's not running.
Okay, so there we go. And I can see the front end UI of the app running on my machine, so I can be able to verify whether or not it works. So moment of truth. Let me click this. And it works.
Okay. Hooray. Awesome. So yes, applause,
yeah,
please.
Yeah.
So in this case, let's talk a little bit about the shared server, because we've had a lot of people ask questions about this. What it's doing is it's using the same SSH connection that was established when I shared with John, and effectively setting up a server on his machine that is able to accept traffic at 3000 and know to proxy it to my machine and back. So it's not using an entirely separate tool. There's no dependencies on his environment at all. Once he installs LiveShare, he is able to then access anything on my machine. And in fact, let's show something that we haven't shown before to really illustrate how flexible the shared server feature is. So in this case, this app is Node.js. You saw us share the web app front end, but it's also got a back end using MongoDB. So what if I'm having an issue that's at the database level, and I want John to be able to help me explore that? So let me go and share another server. In this case, I'm going to share 27017, which is the local MongoDB database. And just to illustrate that, I'm going to switch over to my little Cosmos DB tab and show that on my end, I've got this local database. Here's the articles on 27017. So John?
So let's switch to my machine. So with that forwarded, the port is already mapped. So what I can do is I can go into...
We'll go to the join menu just to
show that.
Yeah. Give the proof.
Yeah, the proof that it's there. It's shared.
Yes.
So I can go into my Mongo client, and using Studio 3T, I can open that up, and when it opens...
Now, while this is loading, another thing that's a cool point, right, is when we talk about from the comfort of your favorite tools, that's not limited to just your IDE or editor, because it's also your browser, right? I'm on a Mac using Chrome. He's on Windows using Edge. When he viewed the web app, he used a different browser. I'm viewing MongoDB in an extension in VS Code. He's using Studio 3T on Windows. And so we're trying to create these primitives where we can share context, not screen, which allows us to actually have quite different environments and preferences.
Yeah, so on my side, on Studio 3T, I can use since it's mapped to the MongoDB port, I can connect to that. It's going to connect to the DB, and I have access to it. What I can do is I can expand out the database. I can see the articles, and I can go in and open the collection. And on this side, I can see that I can see the different documents that are in there, and I can open one. Oops. And I can edit it as well and go into the JSON, and I can just go change something like this. I can go in and say, John was here. Here. Update. And that updates the DB. And what I can do is I can go into the UI, I can refresh it again, And I can see here that me changing it in the database is reflected on the UI as well.
So the cool thing about the shared server feature is that anything that is actually nothing more than a TCP server can be shared. It could be a Docker daemon if you're having issues with that. It could be an Ethereum node. It could be a SQL Server database. Anything that is effectively an application that listens to incoming traffic. And so that way, you enable, as we actually find the need to do database diagnostics to be pretty common. Okay, so now let's kind of show what the exit experience looks like for LiveShare. Because at this point, I've shared a lot of resources with John, and he could go and wreak havoc on my machine, right? So if I come back here, I can say stop sharing server, and I'm going to say stop sharing 2017, and let's also stop sharing port 3000.
On my machine, I can go and I can try to hit the front end again, and refreshing that, and it's waiting for a response, and it shows that it's no longer shared with me, so I don't have access to the UI.
Exactly. And so when we kind of talk about live share, it's really a pay-to-play. The host has control over what's being shared. And in fact, let's say John's helped me. In fact, he went above and beyond fixing my bug, and he modified the database, which I don't appreciate. So if I want to kick him out, I can go and end the collaboration. Yep, show my screen.
Yeah, on his side.
I can say end collaboration session.
And on my side, I get a notification that says I've been kicked from the session.
And not kick.
I'm no longer in the session.
We've completed the purpose of.
I'm done collaborating.
Yes. Okay. So in the keynote we showed Node. In this demo we just showed Node. So is it just a Node tool? Fortunately, the answer is no. In fact, one of the things that we announced on Monday. That was a big thing based on feedback and desire for our journey of collaboration that we're happy to announce is that LiveShare is actually universal. And by that we mean that all the features that we just demonstrated, from editing to language services to debugging, work in the languages that you're using right now. Whether that's TypeScript, whether it's C#, F#, Ruby, PHP, etc. But also different app types. We're not all doing web apps. We're not all building front ends. Some of us are building console applications, automation scripts, etc. And LiveShare has been built to accommodate all of that, with the caveat that it's still in public preview. All right. So to demonstrate that reality, let's show another quick demo that is an ASP.NET Core REST API. So a different language, different type of application. And we want to just quickly highlight and demonstrate that it does, in fact, work. Give you the warm fuzzies that I'm not just up here saying something that sounds good. OK, so as you can see here, this is ASP.NET MVC Core. I'm going to hit share. And we'll send that link again to John on Teams. And once again, the thing that this illustrates is that the experience of sharing and having someone join is the same no matter what the project type is. And while he's doing that, I'm actually going to set a breakpoint and hit F5. Because imagine that this is the area that I want his help on. And so really, the main thing that we want to see is that everything that you saw in the first demo works the same way, right? So it isn't necessarily an entirely fancy new capability. It's that this universal nature of the product is, in fact, true.
Yeah, and on my side, you can see that I'm joined into the session, and it's already debugging, so my debugger is already started when I join it.
Exactly. So in this case, how many of you, this is the Swagger UI, right, a very common way to describe a REST API. Let me just exercise the route that I set the breakpoint in. Okay, go into split screen. And so here we are, once again, broken, right? Not new, but it's important to note that this same experience would work if I opened up a PHP project, Ruby, Rust, whatever. So nobody in this room can leave today feeling like LiveShare isn't applicable to them. Okay. So let's address one other topic that comes up frequently, In fact, I just saw somebody point at somebody else, which must mean you were thinking this, and you wanted to know, this is cool, but it's also kind of crazy. So let's talk about what's going on, how can you feel confident that when you're sharing, you're doing the right thing, and what capabilities do we actually provide above what we just showed to make you feel even more confident as a guest? So all guests in a live share session are required to authenticate. Right. You download the extension, you have to log in with either a Microsoft account, Azure AD account, or GitHub. And that's important because when somebody shares with you, they need to be able to know and verify that your identity is who they think you are. So it's not somebody joined my session, it's johnchu@microsoft.com joined your session. And that makes me feel confident that, okay, that is who I believe him in. When I share and he joins me, as I mentioned before, that is establishing an end-to-end SSH encrypted tunnel. In most cases, the connection can actually occur peer-to-peer. And so none of your code, none of the actions that you do is ever going over the internet. But if we are not able to establish a peer-to-peer connection due to firewalls or NATs, then we use a relay. But even in that case, everything is encrypted. There is no notion of your code being stored remotely or being accessible by anyone other than the people in that session. And then finally, guests are only able to do what the host allowed them, right? As you saw with the shared server, it was only after I said, hey, John, you can see the web app or you can see the database that he was able to access it. After I removed it, it was now gone. And so that way, the host, there's never a question of what is the guest able to do. But there's actually some things that we have that we just released on Monday that allow you to take even more control as the host to feel confident in what you're achieving. So let's go ahead and take a look at what we call secure sharing, right? How can we make it so that collaboration can still be lightweight, but you can feel a little bit more confident that you're not just throwing your code out on the internet and God knows what's going to happen, right? Because that's certainly not fun. Okay, so let me switch back over to the Node project. And as you saw before, when I shared and John joined, this little toast came in that notified me, John Chu has joined your session. That's cool. But what if I don't know who John Chu is? I can see who he is. He had to authenticate. But what if I'm not sure who he is and I don't want him in my session? Well, we actually have a setting. If I go here, and I'm in VS Code, but the same setting is available in Visual Studio as well. And it's called Guest Approval is Required. And by default, it is false. Right here, Guest Approval Required. So I'm going to set this to true. And I'm going to reload my environment. And what this is going to do is, we're probably all familiar with the notion of like a Skype call when you have a meeting set up requiring somebody to be accepted in. Like they join and they're sitting in this kind of lobby where they're waiting for the organizer to explicitly grant them access. And that's effectively what this is, right? And so if you want that extra feeling of only people that I know are joining this session are actually joining, you can enable this session. So let me share once again. And like we saw in the previous demos, it's going to give me a URL. Switch over to Teams. Share this link with John. And let's watch what happens when he joins.
Yeah, so let me try to join that. And I'm going to use VS Code to join. And I will join it via that link. It will start to join and let me show Jonathan's screen as I'm trying to join.
You want to do the split screen?
Yeah.
Okay, so actually this. So now you'll see it says John Chu wants to join your session. Allow them to join, right?
Please let me join.
And go to your side real quick. Right,
and
he's kind of
I'm
in this
limbo. I'm still awaiting it.
Yeah. He's in this limbo phase. Mm-hmm. So let's go split screen. And I'm going to say no. I don't know who John is. So on his side.
On my side, you can see the notification that says, the host has rejected your request to join the collaboration session.
And you even get a little report of problem bug. So if you're really unhappy that somebody rejected you, you can file a bug on our GitHub repo for it. Yeah. don't know why that is there. All right, so now John attempts to join again. Okay. But this time, I'm going to let him in. I'm gonna be nice and, OK, I guess John might be able to help me with this. And then what happens when I say yes, he can come in, is it'll be the same experience that you saw in previous demos.
There we go.
Oh.
Okay, now I'm joining.
He didn't actually join. Okay. And you'll notice here the little zero count at the bottom is indicating how many guests or participants are in this session. Okay, so here comes John Chu. He's actually a great guy. He can help me with this. And so as soon as I say yes, he's in, right? And so kind of talking about that point, once again, of that the host has control, we try to make the experience as lightweight as possible. You share, you get a link, you give it to somebody, they're in, you can see that they're in. But if you want that little bit more assurance that only people I know are in, this setting allows you to have that control. Okay, now let's show one other thing in the realm of control and security. Leave it split screen. That this whole time I've actually been keeping things from John that he didn't know about. And that's because we have another feature called host-only files. That when you share, we want there to be no surprises that, I had some security credentials in a file in my project and John just got them, and even though we're friends today, who knows what tomorrow may bring, right? Right? You write some bad code and friendship can fade away quickly. And so what actually happens is that by default, any file, we leave a split screen, any file that matches your gitignore, if you have one, will not actually be shared with the guest under the assumption that we're all doing the right thing, right, and not checking in credentials or secrets into version control.
Never do that.
No, not a lot of people.
Never do that.
Hey, if you want a cowboy code, that's your decision. And so, for example, let's see here. If I create a file, let's call it secret.js. You'll notice that on John's side, that actually immediately showed up. Right? He can see it. But what if I didn't want him to see it? Let me go add it here.
Where'd it go?
It just disappeared. Right? And so as the host, it's really important that I have that control because I trust maybe John, or we all trust our team, but there's just a right level of security where, right, it's the principle of least privilege. You know, people don't need to have all of the information because who knows what they'll do with it. And so with this feature, right, a question?
Can John modify the gitignore?
That was my question.
Yes. Yes, he can. And so that's a great question. And so then what is the answer to that? Is it that it's a flimsy, like, no reality security feature? So the reason that you can modify the gitignore,
right now.
Try it, John. Let's just show it.
Ignore is right there.
Yeah.
So I can remove that.
Yeah.
And save it. And secrets are back.
Right.
Get
so that,
access to
that's
it again.
Kind of funny, right? So the gitignore is not meant to be the means of security. We use it as the default to be sensible out of the box. If you want hardened security, though, what we have is another file that I can add called vsls.json, which is Visual Studio Live Share. And in there, you can specify hard set rules that are for the whole team. So for example, I can say exclude files, and this takes an array, secret.js. And let's actually go back to the gitignore, and it's removed, right? And so as you can see, John doesn't have it. And in fact, that .vsls.json file is not even there, right? And so the gitignore file is meant to prevent surprises and reduce your need to have to add a new file. But we also have this ability to augment and say, in the context of live share, these files are never shared, ever, right? Okay. So that's secure sharing. Thank you for the question. That was a really, really good question. So what we've shown is, right, live share is end-to-end. It's secure. We provide the confidence to hosts to know that they are achieving what they're achieving. But are we done with solving the problems and achieving the goals that we mentioned? Absolutely not, right? That's why we're in preview. We have a lot more to go. And we've received some amazing feedback in the last few months and things that we are working on in the right now. Things of making sure the fundamentals of the product are better, collaboration. In fact, one of the most common requests that we get is for integrated chat. And there's actually a wonderful company that is here at Build called CodeStream that if you haven't talked to them, please go to their booth. They're sitting up front. They are building an amazing integrated chat experience in VS Code that will work very well with LiveShare. In fact, it's a dream come true to use the two together. And the key point I want to make here is, you know, insert your feedback here. We've gotten to where we've gotten today because of the feedback that we've had from developers, all walks of life, all types of collaboration. Some of you are doing pair programming. Some of you are doing mentoring of junior developers. Some of you are doing education. Some of you are doing swarm programming. And we need to know how those use cases can help us move forward and what feature gaps we have. So this is our GitHub URL at the end, at the bottom. Please let us know how we can continue to improve. And with that, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we'll take questions up front.
Yeah, all right. Take questions.